Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting episode of Politics. And I'm your host, Road Grimes. And today we're going to be talking about a lot of things, but I think I wanted to lead off with my take on some recent liberal conservative tribalist bullshit. So let's start with the COVID thing, because with the vaccine came a very great, there's a very good frame there to present to conservatives an argument for abortion rights for women, right? Because bodily autonomy and decisions about personal health are the same whether they're about a vaccine or an abortion, regardless of what your personal beliefs are. So there's a lot of people with personal beliefs that a vaccine helps other people. That's like saying, if I wear a seatbelt, someone else in a car is not going to die if they crash. Or if I wear a bulletproof vest, it's going to protect someone else if they get shot. I'm sorry, but that's not how vaccines work, despite what you think you know. It's just not. And for conservatives, despite how cute you and Jesus-y you think it is to fight for babies or whatever that you think you're doing, all of y'all support the death penalty for quote-unquote criminals, you know, who have been convicted by the state, who, you know, there's plenty of evidence that innocent people have been executed by the death penalty. So anyone who's pro-life and pro-death penalty is an instant hypocrite. But again, going back to my original point, right here you have, if you're left-leaning and you support, you know, a woman's right to choose like I do, then you can point at this vaccine thing and go, hey, look, yeah, you don't want to take the vaccine. That you're right. It's a personal health decision. And think about the same thing for women and abortions. Despite what you believe, it's a woman's right to choose whether she wants to have a child or not. And you don't have a womb, so shut up. You know, anyway, I could go on for hours about this, but that's an intellectual opportunity that a lot of leftists or liberals had to point to conservatives and go, okay, don't be a hypocrite. You support bodily autonomy for a vaccine, then you support it for a woman's right to choose as well. But instead of doing that, you know, it became a thing to dunk on Trumpers or anti-vaxxers or what, you know. I won't even go down that road because I'm vaccinated and I'm called an anti-vaxxer all the time. But that argument is relevant, and it would have been a very effective cudgel to move a lot of conservatives, especially the libertarian-leaning conservatives, towards a position of pro-choice. The same thing with gun violence and January 6th. So I will fight people who think that Ashley Babbitt, the woman who tried to climb the fence in the Capitol building, deserved to be fucking murdered. She didn't. And regardless of what your politics are, if you support a cop shooting someone who isn't armed climbing a fence, you're a fucking hypocrite. Because the thing that just happened in Atlanta should align protesters with the January 6th people. But instead, because of this tribalism we have, people want to call Ashley Babbitt a terrorist or whatever, just like the right is calling this guy in Atlanta a terrorist. And it's ridiculous. And you all look like stupid morons instead of being intellectually consistent despite your politics. And when it comes to Ashley Babbitt, it makes me insane that there's liberals out there like, yeah, she got what she deserved. No, she didn't. Just because she had a MAGA hat on doesn't mean that she's okay for cops to shoot any more than it's okay for them to shoot a black guy or a black woman or any person of color or any person, period. They do not get to be judge, jury, and execution. I thought we had a justice system. Now we just have armed stormtroopers murdering people. And depending on your politics, you defend it or protest it. You know, it's ridiculous. So anyway, that's the rant I wanted to start the show off with. These ridiculous inconsistencies based on political preference. It's ridiculous. You either support cop violence and cops being judge, jury and executioner, or you support a fair judicial system that a woman like Ashley Babbitt is arrested and taken into court and, you know, tried based on the merits of her crime. Or you support cops being able to murder whoever they want in the case of her and George Floyd, or, and, you know, Sandra Bland, or, you know, Philando Castile, or Michael Brown, or any of the multiple black people who were murdered by police. You're an idiot. Don't be an idiot. So anyway, the first thing I want to talk about today is, you know, propaganda, because the United States is the most propagandized country in the world, and there's no doubt about it. I use this example of Al Jorgensen from the band Ministry, who was, you know, one of my heroes, still is to some degree, but this guy did an anti-Bush trilogy when the Iraq War started. That's how anti-Iraq War he was. And I saw them in concert. I saw his band in concert a year or so ago, and they were doing like Stand With Ukraine propaganda at their show, you know, supporting war because a Democrat's in charge. And it's ridiculous. So I wanted to talk about the Smith-Mundt Act and the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act, because that's one of the reasons that people like Al Jorgensen are out here, you know, basically cheerleading war now, when 5 years ago he was, you know, the biggest anti-war protester on earth. So the Smith-Mundt Act was basically a law that said, hey, you know, the United States is not allowed to propagandize its own citizens, or the State Department is not allowed to propagandize its own citizens. So you look at things like Voice of America, VOA, that was kind of like the military's, I guess, propaganda outlet in other countries. My father lived in Japan for a while, and he listened to Voice of America. You know, it's like, it was like your American broadcasting in foreign countries. It's a way for for us to shape the narrative on an international stage, you know, or basically just, you know, propagandize citizens abroad. So during the Obama presidency, and this is one of the reasons people like me can look at Obama in retrospect and go, wow, this guy was terrible, they passed what's called the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act. And the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act basically says, hey, you know how we said we're not going to allow you to do propaganda on American citizens, State Department? Now we're going to say we need to get modern, and in modern times, it's okay for us to propagandize our own citizens. And so what we have in the United States as a result of this now is basically state TV. You know, corporations and that run the country through the lobbies and money and, you know, dark money PACs and everything, also control the media through this. And so, you know, that's why when you have a situation like COVID, where we just had, where any dissent is immediately crushed and removed from media, and there's been this consolidation of media that Bill Clinton, frankly, started with the Telecommunications Act. You know, you can look all this up. A lot of the Democrats and the quote unquote left of the last 20, 30 years are the ones responsible for this. The ones who, like, look at Obama. This is ridiculous. The Smith-Mundt Modernization Act. And this is one of those things that, you know, Democrats are always able to accomplish the right-wing agenda much quicker than Republicans are, because they're the anti people are out to lunch when Democrats are in charge. The Obama years proved that. I mean, the Bush-Cheney foreign wars were escalated, you know, to the nth degree under Obama, because, you know, the anti-war left was out to brunch the whole time. And now, surprisingly, the anti-war movement is mostly on the right. It's people like AOC and the Squad and Bernie Sanders that are out here like Stand With Ukraine and voting to send, you know, billions of dollars to a foreign black hole, while there's people living in tents and in the United States. You know, it's ridiculous. It's sad. But it's the place we're at. And it's evidence, again, of how propagandized we are, and the importance of this Smith-Mundt Act, and, you know, the importance of Obama's repeal of it. And, you know, I'm not blaming it all on Obama. It's not like he personally was like, hey, we got to get rid of this. But his administration was staffed with people who made sure, you know, or allowed it to happen. And, you know, he didn't use the bully pulpit to make a big deal out of it or say, hey, you know, this probably isn't a good idea. So, you know, he's definitely got to bear responsibility for it. It happened on his watch. So on that note, the next subject I wanted to cover here was Russiagate. So I don't know how many of you follow this or how many of you have, but again, it's another one of those tribal issues where if you're on the left, of course, Trump is a terrible person and everything he does is wrong. And anyone who opposes him is a great and powerful genius who loves America. And Trump is a secret Russian spy and all this stuff. Well, what's been coming out as, you know, time goes on and people regain their sanity is the people who were raking Trump over the coals for ties to Russia actually had ties to Russia themselves. So there was a recent report that a couple of the agents who were pushing the Russiagate narrative in the FBI were actually, I believe, indicted. I need to pull it up and throw it up here. But the point of the matter is it was projection. And so what I did was I kind of went through a lot of the finer points of it, and there'll be links to all these in the reference, you know, reference links in the description. But you know, so the first thing I did was go, okay, so the Clinton lawyer Michael Sussman, right? He was the first kind of real hard evidence that this was a fraud. Basically, he sold the story to the FBI. And he even billed the Clinton campaign for his time doing it. So this is all documented, and, you know, they let him off, of course, because, you know, what he was doing was benefiting the establishment and the, you know, the powers that run the war machine. So he's not going to do any time or anything, but all this came out during the course of these proceedings. So Michael Sussman, and I put a link kind of to, his downfall in the description. And so then there's evidence too that Hillary and Robbie Mook sold, like, came up with this story. And I don't know if you know who Robbie Mook is, but he is I don't want to use the term slime bag, but he's definitely, his entire career is based on ginning up fake smears and disingenuously, you know, labeling people and ruining them. You know, if you know anything about politics, you know who he is, and his reputation kind of speaks for itself. So another piece of this puzzle is, of course, the John Podesta emails, where he talks about how they need to frame Trump as a Russian spy because of the Clinton Uranium One scandal. Which, again, conservatives make a big deal about this kind of stuff, but they all do it too. And the Uranium One thing was like the Clinton Foundation buying influence. And it's, you know, I think the drama queening happens on both sides, where it's like, okay, yeah, it's not a good look, but it's like, you guys all do this crap through your own little organizations and in your own little, it's all legalized bribery and legalized, you know, handouts for these people once they get out of office. Like, they have it all set up for themselves. So, but that's evidence that, hey, you know, part of the Podesta emails are him pointing to that scandal being one of our weaknesses, and how, you know, the political thing to do is you accuse your opponent of the things you're the most guilty of. What was that guy's name? The senator from Idaho who got caught in the bathroom with the gay prostitute. Larry Craig, I think. I'll throw up a link to that. But that whole thing was, I gotta write that down. That whole thing was hilarious because he was one of those guys who, you know, lampooned Clinton for the blowjob from Lewinsky, but then a couple years later they caught this dude soliciting a gay prostitute in a bathroom, and he was one of those, you know, fierce Republican right-wing guys who's like, gay people are so terrible, and if you're gay, you need to pray to God for your life. And then, they, you know, of course they find him. This is becoming a recurring theme in these videos, you know, the Republicans ending up with gay prostitutes. So anyway, moving on to the next piece of this Russiagate thing is, so we have the Steele dossier, right? Literally, CNN and the Washington Post apologized. I mean, of course, they didn't do it very loudly. It's under the radar. But they apologized for using the Steele dossier as a means of reporting. And if you go back and watch these reporters during this time, they're all like, if this is true, it could be. They never say, hey, we found out that Trump, you know, got peed on by Russian prostitutes, which is totally on brand for Trump anyway. Like, they think that's going to ruin him or something. In addition to that, people will say, well, oh, what about all the indictments? once you dig into those, complete nonsense as well. To give you a couple examples, Paul Manafort. This is really funny, actually. When you dig into Paul Manafort's indictment, and I'll put a link to it in the description, directly from the Justice Department, do you know what he was actually indicted for? He was indicted for lobbying for Ukraine. Not even kidding. Literally lobbying on behalf of the Ukrainian government. That's what Paul Manafort was indicted for. And then you have Flynn, Michael Flynn. So what they did to Flynn was the FBI wiretapped him. They literally like listened to his conversations. And part of what you do as an incoming ambassador, like when the new administration came in and Trump appointed him, is you reach out to other countries and you talk to them and say, hey, you know, here's what's going on. Here's what we want to talk to you about. Here's how the new administration feels about this issue and that issue. And that's what Flynn was doing. So the FBI wiretapped him doing this. And then they went and questioned him. And when his answers didn't match their own wiretaps, they indicted him for lying, basically. So this entire thing is hyped up by the FBI.
And Donald Trump's done. He's done. There's no question about that. He's done.
Breaking news.
A bombshell.
Today is a turning point. Today was historically bad for President Trump.
Today was a turning point.
A turning point.
We're at a turning point here.
The beginning of the end for the Trump presidency.
The beginning of the end.
And breaking news.
We have another bombshell.
Mike Pence might have to assume the office of the presidency.
The call for impeachment.
Rumblings of the word impeachment.
Breaking news.
Another bombshell out of the White House.
I believe this is the beginning of the end.
I do too.
It's really the beginning of the end.
The beginning of the end.
He may be feeling the walls closing in on him.
All the walls closing in on him.
The walls closing in on him.
Breaking news, a new bombshell.
One astrologer says this means the beginning of the end for President Donald Trump.
The beginning of the end of the Trump presidency.
Trump will resign.
Trump is going to resign.
Is this the tipping point? I know we've said it over and over.
You think this is a tipping point?
And over and over.
This is a tipping point.
And over and over.
Breaking news, President Trump off the rails.
There's a beginning of the end today.
It's the beginning of the end.
It reminds me a lot of the last days of Nixon.
Breaking news tonight, new bombshell.
This is the beginning of the end.
The beginning of the end.
The walls are closing in.
The walls closing in.
The walls closing in.
Breaking overnight bombshell.
This is a very dramatic day, and I think it might be near a tipping point. Do you think this is a tipping point?
This is unbelievable. This is remarkable. Have you ever seen anything like this?
His presidency is crippled.
December 1st, 2017, you can mark it down. This is the day that everything changed.
We begin with the bombshell.
The beginning of the end.
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 In fact, if this were a football game, we're in the third quarter. May even be the beginning of the end.
We begin tonight with the bombshell.
Donald Trump is in a lot of trouble.
Trump is in trouble.
The president will resign.
Another hour, another bombshell.
This is a tipping point.
Trump's going down.
This president could be impeached.
I do not think the president will serve out his term.
Resignation.
Resignation.
I don't think this president is going to serve out his term.
Mr. Trump will not serve out his term.
He will not serve out his term.
No way, no how.
Breaking news.
Absolute bombshell.
I think Donald Trump is in trouble.
Donald Trump is not. He's done. And it's over.
It's over.
The wall's closing in.
The wall's closing in.
This is going to be the Achilles heel.
Breaking news tonight. I expect Trump to depart.
This week will be the watershed week.
Trump is in big trouble.
Trump's in a lot of trouble.
It's a sign of a terrified old man who feels the
walls
closing in.
The walls
are increasingly
closing in on him.
Tonight the walls
are closing in.
Today changed everything. This is the beginning of the end.
Today the biggest
tipping point for the Trump administration.
What a historic day. The bombshells, they fell.
It's entropy and it's crumbling internally.
He's underwater. He feels the walls closing in.
Could his testimony be a turning point?
We may be at a tipping point.
It's the beginning of
the end.
The beginning
of the end.
Another bombshell.
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 This is a bombshell.
It is a bombshell.
I am beginning to resent the word bombshell.
So that kind of basically sums up the sham that was Russiagate. And there is a couple of reasons I think that this Russiagate narrative was manufactured. Obviously, one was it was really the Clintons' campaign's kind of like primary excuse for losing, and by using that, they didn't have to examine why no one voted for him, because a lot of people will say half the country's racist, which isn't true. I have friends that are not white that voted for Trump, and that's a falsehood. So Russiagate gave the Democrats a convenient excuse not to look inward. And they turned into McCarthy's, just pointing at everyone going, you're a Russian, you're a Putin puppet. You're a spy. So the other thing that Russiagate effectively did was grease the American mind for the Ukraine war. So, you know, I'm not going to jump into this because I think there's a lot of other people that are doing a good job of kind of like outlining what the purpose of Ukraine is way better than I ever could. People like Aaron Matei and the guys at the Durin. But the whole problem with Ukraine started back in 2014, and the U.S. was funding rebels and insurgents that were bombing the Donbass, which is the region of Ukraine that borders Russia. And so we kind of instigated this whole conflict, and then we helped ramp it up. We sent weapons to the rebels who were fighting the government. We helped them overthrow the government and install Zelensky. He's obviously a U.S. NATO puppet. And so we kind of are behind this whole war. So when Putin invaded and people started saying, what's the term that they use? Unprovoked. They keep using this term. It's an unprovoked invasion. Unprovoked. Putin's invasion was unprovoked. No, that's a complete lie. It was very provoked. It would be like if, you know, China put a bunch of soldiers in Mexico and started firing missiles over the border into Texas, and we were just like, oh, you know, didn't invade Mexico and take those people out. Like, that's kind of what's happening, what was happening before Putin invaded. You know, there's people being killed in the Donbass by U.S. missiles that were being shipped over there by us to kind of, you know, and it's very obvious now. And Matt Gaetz even said it. He's a sitting member of Congress. He said, this is the new money laundering scheme, you know. Now that Afghanistan's wound down, we needed a new place to dump money for the military-industrial complex. And
so obviously, I barely have to say it out loud. I mean, to me, our involvement in Ukraine is directly linked to our diminished involvement in Afghanistan.
That's exactly what's happening. You can see it now. They're sending tanks that aren't going to work. They're sending all kinds of new crap, and it's a boon for big business and shareholders, for companies like Raytheon and, you know, Northrop Grumman. The Lloyd Austin, the guy who runs Biden's foreign policy, he used to work for Raytheon. So it's got like Trump broke new ground and just like appointing the dude who ran Exxon as the like Secretary of Energy or whatever it was he did. Like, hey, let's just cut out the middleman and put the friggin' CEOs of big corporate companies right in government. You know, like, why even let them regulate themselves? And so Trump kind of started that, but Biden continued it, you know, putting Lloyd Austin in as the, and people, of course, cheered like, oh, yay, it's the first black man that we get to bomb brown people and dump all our money into Ukraine. Yay. You know, the identity politics crap, you know, the guy's not a good person. I don't care what ethnicity he is. So anyway, that's the kind of dismantling of Russiagate and the purposes behind it. It's a joke. And the fact that people so easily bought all that with no kind of, you know, critical thought or anything, which really primed them for the COVID thing, which, you know, no one questioned, of course, and just blindly accepted. And now a lot of people look really stupid. And, you know, it was just another mistake. And I keep going back to that Smith-Mundt Modernization Act, you know. We are the most propagandized country of the world. This is the theme for episode number 2 of Politics right here. The United States is the most propagandized country in the world. I think Nick from Revolutionary Black Network says that quite a bit, and he's 100% right. It absolutely is. So, moving on, I wanted to talk about this recent Tucker Carlson segment because I like Tucker on a lot of levels. He's one of the few broadcasters out there talking about Julian Assange. He's one of the few broadcasters who brings on guys like Thomas Massie. He's one of the few broadcasters I saw talk about the Kennedy assassination and the recent things that have come to light around that. So I really like Tucker these days. You know, back in the day, I was one of those people who, I was a huge Daily Show fan. And I think the Daily Show, I was thinking about this today, the Daily Show was great in its prime when Jon Stewart was on there, because it called out the media groupthink and made fun of the groupthink in the media and the ridiculousness of it. And maybe a lot of that was his writers, I don't know, at the time, but now he's part of that groupthink. I see him on, you know, I'm subscribed to The Problem with Jon Stewart's new podcast, and he sounds just like the rest of them now. He's not critically, you know, I think recently he did a thing on vaccine skepticism. But anyway, the whole point of me bringing up Jon Stewart is back in the day, I remember when Jon Stewart ripped Tucker Carlson apart on Crossfire and made him look stupid. But nowadays, Tucker Carlson is the one who's actually doing some worthwhile journalism and speaking truth to power. And Jon Stewart is the shill who's like pinning medals on Nazis from the Ukraine. So Tucker did this segment about Antifa in Atlanta. And what I've noticed about conservative commentators, basically they think in political terms, so that they see these protests and they see people burning cars and like burning down police stations, and they don't think this could just be regular people. They're like, no, that's Antifa. It's a terrorist organization. So, you know, and the left does this now too. Everything that's against as alt-right or white supremacists, they did it with the Canadian truckers or whatever. But I think Tucker's interesting, his partisan is showing in this one, because basically what he claims, which I'll kind of walk through and why it's ridiculous, is that Antifa is an arm of the Democratic Party, and they come out when, you know, the Democrats need some political leverage. Like, really, Tucker? Like, you really believe that? Okay, the facts are the Biden administration is as pro-cop, if not more pro-cop, than the Trump administration. They're not on Antifa's side. They're not against cops at all. So the White House's own website has a thing like fund the police. When there were extra COVID funds, Biden famously was like, hey, let's give all this extra COVID money to cops. And then you have the January 6th thing, and this is where Tucker gets really ridiculous, is he tries to like paint this picture of the protesters in Atlanta as rich kids. And he points to this kid who, from a recent, well, let's watch it.
The key Democratic demographic is upscale professionals and their lunatic children. So this kid grew up in a $2 million mansion, pictures of him on his father's yacht. He was arrested on domestic terrorism charges a month ago in Atlanta. He assaulted police officers and terrorized residents. Is he still there? No, he got out of jail immediately. So then apparently he went again to an Antifa riot. This weekend in Atlanta, police say Carroll went out and committed some more domestic terrorism, including arson. So why does this kid, the rich kid, get off when the people who showed up at the Capitol, consistent with their constitutional rights to complain about what really did seem like fraud in the 2020 election, they went to jail? Well, have you ever checked the percentage of January 6th defendants who've experienced a personal bankruptcy? Much higher than average. These were actual working class people, deeply frustrated, completely out of options, and unheard by everyone in Washington. It's not an excuse for the vandalism some of them committed, but it tells you it's a very different group of people. They didn't go to Middlebury or some other liberal arts madrasa.
So basically what he says is this kid is Antifa and he has a rich dad that got him out of jail, which, okay, good for this kid. And, you know, maybe his views are to the left, but all that speaks to is the corruptness of our judicial system. The kid has a rich dad, so he got out of jail. A lot of people don't have rich dads, regardless of their political party. And then he goes on to say that the January 6th protesters were more working class people. And so he's trying to create this wedge between January 6th protesters and between the recent police protesters in Atlanta, when they're really kind of the same people and they kind of have the same gripe that power's out of control and we need to check it, you know? And that's what frustrates me about media today, is even someone like Tucker, who's getting a lot of stuff right, looks ridiculous on this, because he's sitting here going like, oh, it's Antifa. Yeah, Tucker, it's not Antifa. It's people who are fed up with police being the judge, jury, and executioner. So then he goes on to talk about the January 6th thing, and you know, I talked about this at the beginning, but it's just ridiculous to see that, you know, in one sense, Tucker supports, you know, cops being the ultimate authority, being able to murder whoever they want in Atlanta. But then in the January 6th protest, I'm sure he's made a good case that Ashley Babbitt didn't deserve to be killed. You know, but he'll turn around and say this guy in Atlanta who was, you know, protesting tied to a tree or whatever the guy was doing did deserve to be killed, and that the cops are okay to call him a terrorist. And so it just exposes how tribal and ridiculous our media is, rather than show a level of intellectual consistency, they will shill for their tribe at all costs, even when it makes them look dumb. You know, and the left has been doing this a lot more than people like Tucker recently, but I wanted to call Tucker out for this because, you know, it's ridiculous. It's stupid. So, moving on, Ice Cube recently came out and said that he lost $9 million for not getting the vax. And I want to, like, just thank you, Ice Cube. Thank you for being such a badass, Ice Cube, because, you know, most people in those shoes have been framed as right wing, alt right, whatever. And the reality is, like, a lot of people who didn't get the vax were instantly framed as right wing and alt right or whatever. And I got it, but I regretted it. And I respect someone like Ice Cube saying this and kind of saying, I was skeptical of that stuff. And good on him. And Ice Cube is one of those people who, he got in a lot of trouble during the election because he basically called out both parties and said, hey, what are you going to do for the black community? And the Democrats said, shh, we'll tell you after we win. And the Republicans actually gave him a list of things they would do. And so he came out and said, hey, this is what happened. I asked Republicans and Democrats, what are you going to do for the black community policy-wise? The Democrats said, shh, we'll tell you when we win. And the Republicans gave me a list of things they would do. And people lost their minds over that. So Ice Cube is one of those people above the partisan tribal fray who's intellectually consistent. And that's something that is so rare in today's world. And I like to see it. You love to see it. So here's the clip of him saying this.
Mm-hmm. Damn, turned down $9 million. Yes.
Well, I mean, I didn't turn it down. Them motherfuckers didn't give it to me because I wouldn't get the shot.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. I didn't turn it down.
Oh, okay.
They just didn't give it to me.
Oh, because you wouldn't get the COVID shot.
Yeah, the COVID shot.
Oh. Okay.
The jab.
Yeah. During the pandemic. He wouldn't let them poke. During the pandemic, man. The pandemic.
At all.
You didn't me either.
Nothing. Fuck them.
I didn't catch it at
yeah,
all.
Yeah, I didn't need that shit.
But he caught it about 4 or 5 times.
Yeah. Well, you know, circumstances. I got lucky.
Yeah, me too.
Ain't going to take no shit I don't need.
Yeah, I feel you.
So anyway, that there's a reason Ice Cube deserves respect, not only as a hip hop legend, but just as an intellectually consistent and straight up honest guy. So cheers to Ice Cube. And the last thing I wanted to talk about, and this ties everything together, is this recent French protest, which the U.S. media is, of course, ignoring. So here's some footage that was on Twitter. And by ignoring, I mean, they're not ignoring it. They're just, you know, they're more focused. Oh, my God, the Biden documents. Oh, the documents. You know, it's more like that if you watch the chorus of puppets in the mainstream media. So I thought it was interesting because this lady had this tweet where she said, you know, I was showing this to my French boyfriend and he's like, how are they going to solve anything if they don't set anything on fire? You know, and I'm just like, do you remember when after 9/11, the French weren't into the Iraq war and all the conservatives and the pro-war people were calling them surrender monkeys and calling the French like weak, and they changed the name of French fries to freedom fries and the congressional cafeteria and all that kind of crap. Well, the French, it turns out, have a lot more balls than most Americans. So cheers to you, French people. And maybe the United States can, you know, follow your lead on this kind of stuff and you know, organize some real protests that really actually kind of affect the establishment. And because this is the reality. We're not asking for a lot. I think having the same, you know, public healthcare system that a country like Canada has in the U.S. would change so many things. Having Medicare for all in the United States would I think stem a lot of the gun violence, a lot of the, because people are just so desperate. And also they don't have access to good mental health care, you know? And if you could go, if you're paid your taxes and you could go see, you know, a psychiatrist, and when you feel this way, instead of just going like, I want to kill myself, so I'm going to just go kill a other, bunch of other people first. You know, I want to end, my life is meaningless, so I want to like take it out on a bunch of other innocent people. That's what all this comes down to. It's a lot of these people are angry or suicidal, and you know, rather than just kill themselves, they feel like they have to do something to take out other people. So anyway, I'm going to wind this down with that and just say that, you know, respect to the French for organizing this and you know, making their leaders fear the people. Because that's something that's lost in the United States because of propaganda. Because of the Smith Modernization Act, people are sitting at home going like, oh, Russia did it all. Oh, COVID, I'm so scared. You know, this cold virus has killed my grandma. The hospital said it. But yeah, that's, I mean, I don't even want to get into the ridiculousness of the COVID narrative and how that continues to be. Russell Brand's doing a great job showing that off. But anyway, thanks for listening, and hopefully this is a little bit better vibe than last time. I feel like I'm kind of like learning as I go here, but enjoying doing this, and hopefully people are enjoying listening or watching it.